Easy is the problem.
So very good.
Good morning, Master. I would have said, how is it after a nice research and constituency work? But for all their sins, the Capenard made sure that we start our third term with a wet and a cold weather. Last night when I was flying in, the moment I got out of the plane, I sensed that Cape Town weather is rather harsh. But anyway, we're here now, and I trust and hope we've all re-energized. Sorry for those who are just working out throughout this cold winter. But there you are. We are back at the Team Energy. Before anything, let's just recap a little bit. Today we are expecting a response from our team, which was supposed to look at how do we go about carrying out further due diligence, as well as a scenario building exercise on the Eastern Mobile. As you all may remember, that quite a substantial number of inputs, both oral and written, during the public hearings on the Eastern Mobile, were very, very assertive and firm about transfer of the transmission sector, if I can use that loose term, out of ESCOM as part of the restructuring which had been influenced by the Eastern Mobile. That obviously influenced us pretty strongly that we should then apply our minds on that. But exactly what does this mean for us? Hence, the initiative that a team led by Department of Energy with the Public Enterprise, National Treasury, and ESCOM itself should then look at the further due diligence as well as the scenario building exercise. I'd like to highlight that we were saying that obviously on the basis that even if we had not seen in the past, there has been a due diligence done in the past, no matter when. Hence the emphasis, honorable members, would like to say that we're talking of a further due diligence. In fact, initially the dream was that we would have been going for processing the deal throughout the whole of August, but then because of this cost, if I can call it, we then decided to put in other items so that we can deal with this matter, apply our minds very soberly and substantively before we reinstate the processing of the deal. Having said that, can I get our committee secretary to give us any apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. The following apologies to Honorable Moloto, who's having urgent meetings in Johannesburg today, and then Honorable Matibela, who's on sick leave. Honorable Zelau indicated earlier that he will be joining us as well today. Just running late. Those are the apologies.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Shall we then move on to get the briefing from the team? And once again, as I said, the team has worked for us, Energy, Public Enterprise, National Treasury, and ESCOM. They are a team. they definitely have their representative or shop steward or ambassador in whatever way they put it on. Oh, welcome on our service. For all the sins of making Cape Town so cold. you're welcome in any case. Okay, fine, we settled. Can we get the update? How far was it gone on this matter?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, you will recall that at the last meeting, the committee tasked the team to go back and do a scenario building exercise that will inform the due diligence. The team has met. The team has developed the terms of reference that will inform the due diligence. However, it will be recalled that at the last meeting, we did report that for ESCOM to proceed with the due diligence, ESCOM needs to be mandated by Minister Gigaba as the shareholder so that ESCOM can proceed with the due diligence. However, before Minister could mandate ESCOM to do the due diligence, Minister needed to be fully briefed on the immobile, so that he understands what the full implications of the bill are. Minister has been briefed, and at the briefing itself, Minister had indicated that he fully shares the concerns that had been highlighted in the bill about what implications will have.
Can you move closer to the mic?
What implications will come about as a result of transmission being taken out of ESCOM, and he needed to before he can task ESCOM with the due diligence, he needed to engage with the chairman, ESCOM chairman. The engagement has taken place, and what needs to be take place is that the letter must now go out from Minister to the chairman. So I can report today that the letter has been prepared. It's sitting on the minister's desk. So we're hoping that it will be signed during the course of this week so that ESCOM can go ahead with the due diligence. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So that's just before we get input. Can you just ascertain who is who? We have the public enterprise represented, definitely the DG from energy. Their team is around. I see ESCOM, and National Treasury. Oh, National Treasury is represented as well. So at least the four pillars of this team are around. That's helpful. Honourable members, that's the update. Can I invite responses, questions, clarity seeking, and comments, please? Honourable Failing?
Sure. Honourable Chair, I mean, I'm not quite sure how to respond to this. The fact is that this bill is vitally important that we actually get this thing moving now. And we gave a timeline for getting the due diligence. I mean, what we've been informed, Jerry, is that now the whole process is on hold again. Can we get a timeline as to when we would actually get this due diligence report? I mean, I would have thought that in the interim of the last 2.5 months, we would have actually seen some work being done on this. And as you say, I mean, due diligence has in fact been done in the past. Surely this isn't a question of kind of ministerial authority. This is a question of, clarity seeking. We want to know what the implications are of this so that we can do our role in terms of passing the correct legislation. So, I mean, we need a timeline on this. This thing can't go on forever. People are wanting this, isn't it? Well, we need to move forward on the institutional restructure, and we definitely need that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Failing. Any further input? Honourable members, can't start the third term of such a loop. This is a very vibrant community. Or is it because of the... Okay. When are we going to get the due diligence report and scenario building exercise report? I'm sure that question is not thrown at the public enterprise only. It's thrown at the team as a whole. We expect them to work as a team. We are all ears. Welcome, Honorable Slough.
Be the only one expressing outrage, but I mean, the point is that this is a completely untenable situation. You know, I mean, in fact, what we expressed at the last meeting was that this due diligence should have been done a long time ago. It was, in fact, in the 1998 Energy White Paper that this was on the card, and we expressed our outrage at that point that this due diligence wasn't, in fact, done before. And now what you're telling us is that it's going to be 4 months from the time that you appoint the outside consultant. So when are these outside consultants going to be appointed? This is going to push the timeline out until next year. Then we still have to deliberate on the bill. So essentially, we're only going to look at the implementation of it or the passing of the ISMA bill sometime towards the beginning of next year. And, I mean, this is about 2.5 years after the President, in fact, announced in his State of the Nation that we would have an ISMA legislation in place. So this is clearly a timeline that we can't work with. This is not what we expressed at the last meeting, and I mean, I don't know what action that we can take from here. I mean, clearly we have to take some decision as a committee as to how we actually fast-track this.
Any other input? Oh. Honourable Smiley.
Chairperson, if we're going to receive two reports or two due diligence reports, one from ESCOM and one from the team, or that's all from the department. I'm trying to understand.
No, we can't. We have to have one.
Yeah, it's one. So we're waiting for the one from Eskom, because we can't proceed if we haven't got... We can't actually put our mindset going forward with the whole ISMA bill, because that is where the whole matter lies within ISMA, is exactly this report. And there's no way that you can argue anything if we're not sure what we want to do as a committee, where the where the grid is going to lie. And that is and that's the bottom line of this whole thing. And I would have thought that 2.5 months from then would have been sufficient. It wasn't. It wasn't argued that at a previous meeting that it was not possible. And I'm just trying to understand that, because surely the team should have raised their concerns then and not now come up with something else, because to go the route of another consultant, cost-wise, I've also got my questions, because why can't Eskom come up with that? Why must the consultant also be appointed? Obviously, they will try to protect their best interests, but it will come from them. And that's why we sit in a committee to deliberate the possibilities and the pros and the consequences. So I don't see the need of that.
My understanding is that Eskom is quite central to further due diligence, right? But the whole team is just as equally central to scenario building. But I just want also to re-emphasize, because it just dawned in my mind, as well, on the feeling that the Energy White Paper does indicate the end state of the transition. And surely what then was clear, should be clear in our mind, is that how that's done, having this process been triggered by the future of the transition, having been triggered by the small bill. But there's a question from why a consultant? I don't know how the public enterprise or Eskom would respond to that.
Chairman, Monga Zinsabola from Eskom, the request to actually engage an external consultant is not from Eskom, is from our colleagues from the other government departments. And the way I understand it, probably is to ensure impartiality or whatever. As Eskom, we have done a desktop due diligence, which was part of the ISMO bill, and that is an input into the process.
How old? You said that was part of the
ISMO bill
process. So it's fairly recent.
Yes, sir.
What areas did it cover?
Chair, it covers the impact of the impact of taking ISMO out of Eskom, and it interrogates, for instance, the issue of the security of supply, because your national control, which does the dispatch, also does the restoration of power interruptions and so on. So it goes into length in terms of what is the risk of separating the ISMO vis-a-vis running the grid. It also interrogates the issue of safety, health, and environment from the legislation point of view. because if there was to be a miscommunication, for instance, between an instruction from ISMO to do something in the network and someone on the field did something wrong and someone gets killed, in terms of the law, there is someone responsible in terms of the safety. So it looks at a protocol of how dispatching and how instructions could possibly be done, kind of a back-to-back between ISMO and the grid operator. It looks at things like how will the financial flows be if ISMO was to manage, buy and sell power from the IPPs, because without buying, there's certain obligations that ISMO would do, including guarantees to be able to pay all the IPPs for the power they have generated, and also collect from the customers that use the power. Therefore, you also need a clear separation of duties and responsibilities between ISMO as the buyer of the power and the seller of the power, the generators, and then the customers on the other side. So in coming with the ISMO bill and in coming with the recommendation to the committee chair that the three functions that ESCOM proposes should be the first one to move to ISMO was actually based on that study. And if you'd recall, Chair, the study then said the scenario planning in terms of IRP studies, the issue of the market administrator setting the price and buying, and also settling the accounts, making sure everyone is paid. That should be the first three functions that should go. And then the issue of customers, the issue of cash flows, and the issue of the system operator in terms of giving instructions on operating the grid, those should follow later because there are serious implications and dependencies. So in short, Chair, the last recommendation by ESCOM in terms of phasing the ISMO was actually based on the study I'm talking about. That's the study that informed us that that should be the first phase, and then later on follow with the rest of the phases. Those studies we have.
If it's online, can you just remind us of the phases that was proposing?
Chair, the first phase was that we ring-fence those three functions within ESCOM, those three phases, and that phase two was then to form a subsidiary and move those three phases so that they are totally ring-fenced. And Chair, here, one key assumption ESCOM was working on was that the key role of ISMO is to give confidence to the IPPs that in investing in generating plants, their investments will be protected and they will get returns over the duration of that contract. And therefore, the market operator, being the ISMO, is the very first thing that will stabilize the market and give independence and assurance to the IPPs. So that would have been the first phase. So it's ring fencing, first phase, second phase, subsidiary. And then third phase, look at cash flows, because the first three phases, all ISMO would do would be to do a money flow trail. They will not handle the cash, but they will account in terms of the prices, compute the wholesale in terms of averaging, and then come up with a price to charge the customer. Customers are charged out, and then they make sure that the IPPs and the customers are paid. So the first two phases, there won't be cash flow through ISMO. Cash flows will still be through ESCOM, but they will do the auditing and the invoicing and the balancing. Then third phase will be looking at the cash flows, now money actually flowing through ISMO. And for that to happen, then, Chair, the issues of customers to have to cede their contracts, that they are no more contracted with Eskom, but now contracted with ISMO. Because once they sell the power, they don't sell to Eskom, they sell to ISMO. So there's issues of guarantees, there's issues of capability and assurances that they will settle on time, and there's contractual issues. There's also an issue, in fact, that at that stage, ISMO would have to be licensed by NERSA, because it will then become a trading entity. So that would have been phase three. And then the very last phase would then look at actually ISMO doing instruction for switching. And the instruction for switching, the reason is the last one, Chair, one is with a very tight power system at the moment, you don't want the national control or the dispatching being done outside of the power system. And we are hoping that at that stage the reserve margins would have improved, the risk of power shortages will be less, and therefore you can separate a part of the dispatching to system operator while leaving the field staff, the actual, you know, maintenance and operating on the ground, whilst leaving that with transmission. We, as ESCOM, we propose that that be the last, that be the last phase. But here in our submission, all of those phases were clearly articulated as a proposal from ESCOM.
Honourable Fahim, or any other input? Okay, fine. Honourable Fahim.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, yeah, I mean, as important as those issues are, I mean, you know, with all due respect, that doesn't deal with the issue at hand. I mean, essentially, we dealt with those submissions in the public hearings. We went through a very lengthy process around all of those particular issues. The, where we got stuck was to say that we want to know the implications of transferring the actual assets of the grid out of Eskom and into ISMA. That is where we're sitting at the moment. And we haven't got the response back from Eskom yet to say what those implications are. But, you know, to be frank, though, essentially the legislation is currently sitting with this committee. We gave an opportunity to Eskom to go away. We actually went into abeyance for 2.5 months so that we could get this report, so that we could pass proper legislation knowing full well what the implications would be. But essentially what we're hearing today from Eskom is that this report hasn't been done, even though the timeline has been set. And essentially it should be up to us as a committee to set the timeline, not in fact for Eskom to constantly hold us in abeyance. Surely this report can be done, and I'd also be interested to hear from the other members of the team. I mean, surely Treasury must have done something on this as well. Why is it only left up to Eskom? I mean, it shouldn't just be in their hands to determine what the implications of this is going to be. But essentially, I mean, I believe that us as a committee should set the timeline and that the other players should fit in with this. We're giving you an opportunity to input into this. This isn't a case of you setting the agenda yet. So, I mean, I think that we need to take a strong hand to wrestle this issue back again. Thank you, Chair.
Sure, other honourable members are listening carefully. Yes. Actually, I had noted one question that any teamwork here, well, even if we are hearing from public enterprise and ESCOM, one of the members in the last term, we actually were, you know, assigning this to the team as a team, not to ESCOM. So we'd like to get other inputs as well. But if you could, honourable, bear with us, to make comments and fire a few questions before we come to a decision. I trust and hope all that this has been done, whatever has been done in the past 2 months has been done through teamwork. I'd like to see not frowns on that. And can you just remind us, what are we talking about in terms of the assets? What's their value? And what income do they generate within the Eskom financial setup? It just comes back in mind. I know Honorable Blot, on his behalf, he would have asked this question now that you have had your latest report as well, the financial report, it just would be good if you could, rehearse that area. And you see, the desktop due diligence talks about the impact of the transfer. Then what comes up in my mind then, if Eskom had handled that fund of the members at the stage when they were preparing for the ISMO bill, at the expense of repeating, apologies for that, when you say further due diligence, what is it that they would add in that area? Because the essence of this further due diligence is to look at the impact of the transfer. So my spiritual thinking is that if that has been done, what is it that they see as necessary to be added there that would give value to us? Or turn the question around, were they to give us the existing due diligence report and you go through it, is there anything that they think that would have been left out of what is existing? Please correct my suspicions, because I might be tempted to say that the existing report is okay. If you are shaking your head, please come up, Eskom, and say, and also public enterprise, and say, no. Because of 1, 2, 3, we feel that there's really a need for further due diligence. I'm sure people who are trying to be as factual as possible, to ensure that we balance between quality in processing our work, but also to move with speed as well. Because those are the two enemies that we face in time. That's all, Gamkuru.
Chairman, the team that's working on the due diligence is working exactly on that scope in terms of what are the things that should be in. But some of the things they will have to consider is, one, for instance, the technical separation of transmission from distribution in terms of voltages, in terms of the interfaces, in terms of metering, and so on. So there's a technical separation of the actual assets and how you, how you relate to each other from an operating point of view. Mm-hmm. Then, Chair, there's the issue of the assets, transmission assets themselves, the valuation thereof, and the compensation thereof. I mean, one of the things that Eskom does when it raises funds from the bonds is to use its consolidated balance sheet. If you start separating those assets, which are the underlying surety for those bonds and for borrowing of money, that has got implications in terms of the people who are holding bonds to Eskom. So the third part, so the first one is the separation, as I said, the second one is the assets themselves. The third one is separating the assets into different companies as the end state would then have bearing in whoever has lended money against those assets. You'll have to go back to all the lenders, make sure they agree that you can actually separate and that Eskom can basically divest of those assets, and that they are happy with the new owner and whatever. So there is that process as well from the lenders. And then, Chair, with that, there's the whole issue of the further borrowing capacity of Eskom in terms of raising funds. Their balance sheet will look totally different once you've taken out transmission. So they'll have to relook at the whole bill program. They'll have to relook what they can borrow from the market. And that's where National Treasury suggested we might even have to do new rating re-rating of the company, in fact, of the different new units in terms of their financial strength and so on. And then, Chair, you'll have to disbundle the whole head office of Eskom in terms of you've now centralized services of IT, of HR, of, you know, of many different divisions. If you take one division out, you need to work out what proportion of the rest of Eskom actually supports that division, and you'll have to divest that. Because if you don't, you'll end up with stranded assets and stranded resources being left with, you know, with Eskom. So, Chair, my appreciation of the complexity is that, you know, this is not going to be an easy exercise, and hence all three or four parties, National Treasury being involved, DOE from a policy, DPE from a shareholder representative, and us as the operators of the asset. So roughly, Chair, those are the issues that will be in the scope of work, in the terms of reference, and those were not considered when we did the ISMO. When we did the ISMO, ESCOM's proposal was separating the market administration, as I said, Chair, sorry if I'm repeating myself, and then do an auditing and an accounting balancing, giving assurance that everyone is treated fairly and, you know, the prices and the flows. But the model we proposed was not ISMO owning the assets. And we did say in that submission, if you look across the world, both models exist. There are international countries where ISMO and transmission are one, and there are international companies where transmission is separate from ISMO, and those work as well. It's a question of the choice of South Africa. What is it that we want? And as Eskom, our position, Chair, was given our very tight power supply, it is risky at this stage to move transmission away from generation. You are bringing a big risk from a security of supply. Again, sorry to repeat, that's the original submission that we've done. We've now taken the new direction from the portfolio committee of going back and re-looking the transfer, and that's what this multi-team is looking at, Chair.
To answer my other question, you've even indicated yourself the value of the transmission asset. What are we talking about?
Chair, offhand, we're still working on that in terms of the asset values.
Isn't it around 24 billion according to your financial report? This one?
Probably, Chair.
Which is about 7.5% of the total assets of ESCOM.
There's another exercise, Chair, that's also happening, which is about changing our accounting method from changing our accounting method to depreciated replacement value, so that you can actually make sure that your returns can replace the assets. And my recollection would be the figures in last year were basically just depreciated, not market depreciated value, but just book value, meaning straight line depreciation. But
sure.
Again, the team, the part of the work of the team would be to make sure that our asset evaluation method for this exercise is the correct one.
Of course, honourable members, I don't like to detract from the main thing. Just to say, you know, honourable Mlotha, I would keep on checking on that because it is for say. But it just came to me that, in any case, how much are we talking about? What are we talking about in terms of Eskom's total, you know, asset base? But that's not the main area of focus, you know. But it would be good to know that. Prof. Mayatula.
Thank you, Chair. I'm appreciating this discomfort from the members. So what we're expecting today was a report to say what is what. And what we are getting at the report is that a letter has been filed for this to be done. I'm trying to push us now to accept that really. That there is a letter that allows ESCOM to do what needs to be done. It's uncomfortable as we are. And all what we need to do now, given our own timeline, I'm suggesting all we need to do now as a portfolio committee, I will give them 1 month, I will give them 2 months, because from the report that we are getting now, it seems there is something that is still missing as we think those are. So if we have to move forward now, let's accept that this diligence has not been done, but a green light has been given for it to be done. And on our side, is that a 1 month, is that a 2 months, so that we do know that everybody out there is waiting for this. We may, from our angle then, well, what is our best minimum time we can give them? I'm proposing that we do that now, and we leave this at that.
Obviously, I don't remember, that's why I was coming up deliberating questions, even repeat questions from the second term, because I wanted us to move to that, you know. And remember, I even said that if were we to be given the existing due diligence report, what is it that's necessary? No. And I wanted us at the back of my mind to say, okay, if this is the extra information that is needed, so even if we're not the expert, but how much time would it take to handle that? Would it take 4 months? I'm throwing it to the team, not just to ESCOM. We can't try.
If you allow me,
yes,
if you allow me, again, just one more comment. If you were to ask me, ESCOM is subjectively involved in this. They have a lineage, one or another. I would vote more for an outsider to do that. Than allowing them to do it for themselves.
So we're going for the consultancy thing. Look, I'm going to throw it deliberately and provocatively to the team. Once again, I emphasize the team. I don't think after the explanation from ESCOM that we need 4 months. Convince me. And I can see, not only from the chair, I see the notes coming up from the team. Please, guys, convince us. We are not convinced about the 4 month period. Come, National Treasury.
Thanks, Ted. I think from where we're sitting, when we're actually developing the project plan, we had ESCOM and the report, the due diligence that has been spoken about earlier. And we felt that, in actual fact, the 4 months was the tightest of them all timelines that you can actually come up with. Our initial thinking was that if for us to do a proper due diligence on this exercise, we needed at least 6 months. But we felt that to speed up the process, as it has been actually stated, 4 months will actually cover, at least we'll be comfortable with the 4 months. But initially, we needed at least to plead with the committee to give us at least 6 months to do a proper job on this exercise. But we are actually saying 4 months is the tightest that we can actually come up with. So we're pleading with the committee that at least 4 months will actually give us enough time to actually conduct a proper study.
Okay. Just before I forget, I'd like Nessa to come closer. We might have a question for Nessa something. Welcome, Nessa. But honourable member, respond. Mama Ferguson, that is loud. I think this is waiting from our. Look, I don't want to talk now. Let me leave it to you to really comment. I've already said, so in fact, on your behalf, that we are not convinced even with 4 months.
Okay.
I don't know whether the ESCOM person has highlighted areas that need to be added. Was I seeing you correctly? You highlighted areas that need to be added to the existing due diligence desktop research, isn't it? Right. Their hands, Honorable Smiley, Honorable Freddy.
Chairperson, there's clearly, there has been some sort of a framework developed. There has been. It's just putting a few things extra in. And you must have done something in the last 2.5 months
since we've left. In a sense, we asked for certain things, and you were anticipating certain information, and that information should be available somewhere. I truly would like to see that within the next 2 months, that, you know, that's my timeline to say in 2 months' time there's got to be something on the table, because those are the knots and crosses that needs to be filled in, and it's for the team then to come back in 2 months' time to say on what these are the one or the two aspects that we could not finalize or could not agree to. If there are some issues of risk or issues of transfers or issues of research that you could not put your heads around. And if it's one or two issues, then at least that we can have a broader picture and that we can depart from. But to hold this whole situation back for another 4.5 to 6 months, it's unacceptable.
Honourable Fraley.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I just feel very uneasy about this because, I mean, now we're here and we need another 4 months, we need 6 months, we need this. I mean, the point is, though, that I mean, what I've heard today in terms of the process is that when we gave them 2.5 months last time, nothing seems to have happened since then. I mean, it's all been about process rather than actually getting the work done. So, in a sense, they've treated this committee with scant respect. I mean, we haven't had the respect of saying that we're actually doing work on this. What I think we should do is we should set the timeline here, and we should set it as a timeline for this committee to pass this bill before the end of the year. And nothing should actually hold us back in terms of that. And if people can't do the work in time for that, then we must make those decisions because this legislation sits with us. We're giving people an opportunity to input into this. If they don't take that opportunity, then we should move forward anyway without that input. And that should be the kind of message that goes out there. We cannot be held back by Eskom on this particular issue. Secondly, Chair, what I think is that from what I've heard is that the implications of such a transfer of assets is in fact more about an accounting principle. It's more about an accounting process. And perhaps what we should do is get input from other outside consultants, just like Eskom seems to be wanting to do, to actually give us an understanding of what the implications are from their perspective. And then it gives Eskom and Treasury and everyone else a chance to then comment on those particular inputs that get given. And so maybe in the interim period we can take those particular submissions, understand it for ourselves, and then put those questions to Eskom when they will hopefully come back to us in the next few months. But I think that really we need to be strict. We need to pass this legislation by the end of the year, and I don't think that anything in this timeline should actually hold us back from doing that. Thank you, Chair.
I didn't want to be tempted to run to that or not failing, but I must confess that I eat deep inside myself as well. But I just wanted us to go steadfastly, you know, to that decision if we need to come to. But look, at the expense of being unpopular and defending, you know, some of the protocols, you know, that Eskom had to get its approval from the political principal, time and things, you know, so at least let's give them due on that. Maybe we could say then they could have been more creative to fast track the decision and feedback on that on the other end. But also just as a comment, you know, I hope the team, not just Eskom only, the team should take note of some of the proposals coming and their implications. Because if we then, as a committee, start saying that let's go our own route and get external experts, you know, on our own to convince us, and we feel confident that can be done within a reasonable time, it then for me that's denting our confidence on you, and that doesn't augur well, unfortunately. That really doesn't augur well. Before I'll see you, Mama Fagasi.
Hello? Sure. I also thought that we were coming here today and we were going to have some more clarity, but that was the instruction close to the end of the last term. And I take your point about, yes, we might have had to wait for the political head to give authority. I just want to ask the team as well, through you, have they been in touch with you at any point as the chairperson? Have they voiced that they were experiencing some problems, that we are 1.5 months down the line, and was there contact with you? Did you understand that we were going to come here today and not have the responses we expected? And then while Honorable Freiling is being very decisive on what we should be doing, I do agree with him, but let's correctly, let's go the step by step. And I do also agree with the fact that in my mind, and I am not an expert at all, that the assets should really just be an accounting transaction. But it might be an extremely huge transaction that we don't understand. But they need to come back to us for that. But my question is, have they been in touch with you as the chairperson outlining that they may have difficulties with our timeline that we had set previously? Has there been in the last 1.5 months? Thank you.
And I'm amongst other things, I hope people appreciate, we're just resting our minds. What's the impact of a 7.5 assets worth of assets? Transferring them from an institution like ESCOM. I don't know. I mean, I may see it at 7.5%, and you may say, hey, hang on a minute. Actually, when it comes to issues such as what was that technical term? The when you talk about your commitment to pay debts and things, you know,
the loan covenants.
That's one. Loan covenants. But I'm just provocative. What's the significance of 7.5% on those loan covenants? We want to understand, you know, because, look, let me be honest and open. I would jump up if it's 50-60%, you know, of a company's assets, you know, on loan covenants. But my straightwise knowledge that 7.5%, I'm sure it's something that's negotiable, you know. Yes, we're sensitive to funders. We're sensitive to market. We're sensitive to all of this, but 7.5%, okay, please convince us. Over and above the question that the Honorable Ferguson is asking, I'm throwing this to the team once again. I don't want to create an impression that it's only ESCOM that has the answer.
Just on the value, the other thing to appreciate is that currently ESCOM is vertically integrated. You generate, you transmit, and you sell to the customers. So from a lender point of view, they see that as one deliverable, and therefore they've got high assurance that their debt will be paid, the money they lend will come back. When you start breaking that value chain into different components, although not depicted or although not proportional to the value, you're destroying that value chain, and you are bringing a risk that if any of those different components now do not work, something could go wrong, and your quality assurance and assurance that they will be delivered at the end is compromised. So there is the value of the transmission assets. There's the issue now that there's different components that gonna collect, that gonna operate, that gonna generate, and the whole thing is no more integrated. And one of the things, for instance, rating agencies look at is diversity of your customers and making sure that the customers can pay so that the organization can pay its commitments. If you separate all of that, the rating agencies are not only going to look at ESCOM generation that will be left behind. They will have to look at ESCOM generation, look at ISMO, look at the customers separately. And very likely, your rating of separated entities will be lower than a rating of an integrated one whole. So that's the other thing to consider. So it's not just the value. It's also the fact that now you've got different entities that you must manage and regulate and make sure all of them perform so that the whole performs. So that's the other risk that we need to go through as we do the due diligence.
I'm sorry, I have to. You triggered a very good response to me on that. One, there's legacy in this industry. globally, even if there was no legal in the industry, there's a certain amount of confidence on South Africa's system. I'm looking at everyone to shake heads, or to whatever, that if there are changes on institution of ESCOM's size, it's not that it's going to be doom and gloom. South Africa in government, even if the recent global economic meltdown has been able to handle its financial systems, its accounted, financial accounting systems, and on all of that. So, I'm not convinced by what you're saying. Honourable Member, you can also comment. I know funders are sensitive, but if these very funders why should they talk so differently if they talk relative? I don't say high, but they relative. They have show the confidence on South Africa in terms of its accounting ability and its system generally. No, I'm sorry. That's not convincing. But members, you can come in there. I still feel that with the backing of the National Treasurer, not you, Honourable Minister Gost, particularly the head, they can be able to give a backup to say, look, even if this giant is being restructured, we will be there as National Treasury to give any backup should there be any signs of instability. I think we're handling this with some level of confidence. I see that some head, that is Lau, and then Prof.
Sir, if I say things that have already been dealt with, please forgive me, because I know I have missed quite a number of engagements on this matter. But the worrying thing here is that the argument as put by ESCOM looks like an argument that a company would put if a certain portion of it is sold to another company. What I want to put emphasis on is that both ESCOM and ISMO will remain state-owned enterprises dealing with electricity. There will be no change. If at the moment the lenders are lending ESCOM money on the basis of how it exists currently, are these monies or these rights to make those loans not authorized by the cabinet? And if they are, it is the same state. It's not someone else coming in to buy ISMO and making ESCOM smaller. It doesn't work like that. It's a restructuring of this company into two pieces, but still the same company that has got. It's like if we could create a holding company on top of you and say ESCOM, you become this piece, and then ISMO is this other piece, but we have got the Department of Enterprises, Public Enterprise, on top of you as the shareholders' representative, which shares are 100%. How do you come up with an argument of loss? My view is it's not coming clear as to how will ESCOM be financially lose their ratings. Or how will the lenders lose confidence? Because there is nothing going anywhere. We only simply just saying, from this part to this part, we'll name it this. From this part to this part, we'll name this. Separate generation from transmission and distribution. But those companies will still be there. The company will still be there. It's only issues of management, I think. Restructuring, as you rightfully said, it should be.
Thank you, sir. I'm as angry as everybody.
But I want to propose that we hasten slowly. I would not have expected ESCOM to have done anything without the approval of the chair. There's nothing that ESCOM could do without that approval. Our anger is based at the time in which everything worked itself out, where the minister had to meet the chair and then write a letter and work where we are now. And we all know the end result. Whether ESCOM wants it or not, this is separation is going to happen. And if we all agree with that reality, that certainty, I'm saying, why don't we allow this process to move? To me, if they say 4 months, for example, maybe 4 months is too long. We're in August now. That was September, October, November, December. That would be too long. But even if we are saying 3 months, it would be now August now, September, October, November, and we are closing in November for the recess to come. And that's trying to be practical now. Now, when we look at all those angles, we find that our 3 months, 4 months, 2 months does not make that much of a difference. I want to make a clear proposal. We are going to dismantle ESCOM. That's the case. Let us allow this due diligence, whoever does, to dealt with thoroughly, so that when we take, maybe we finalize that deal, we know what we're dealing with. And given that, therefore, I'd rather we give them, therefore, the 2 months, and they report back in that 2 months, so that if whatever is they are able to do, it's only then that we can extend it. I'm making a firm proposal.
Well, thank you, Chair. I wanted also to concur with Honorable Mayatuli. I think the one important thing is that we must avoid postponement, too many postponement of this thing. If we give this home, they agree with this format. Probably in the middle of the process, they must be able to come and brief us how far they. So that we don't find them coming back to us probably January, saying they want another extension. It will be very a very disappointing fact. So I think if we can be able to deal with that and allow the process to move on, I think it will be able to assist everybody. Thank you.
Any other input before I make a input? Yes, 100%.
Yeah, sure. I don't want to necessarily comment on government protocol. The only problem is that when we gave this deadline last time round, it was not communicated to us at all that in fact such a protocol would need to be followed, and that 2.5 months down the line, the work on the actual report would not have even started. So I think that there has been a definite oversight in that regard. And I think that what I certainly do not want to see is a further excuse come in 2 months' time that, no, they have to follow other protocols in order to generate this particular report. I think what is important is that we have to set a very strict timeline and that no excuses will be tolerated. We have to now move ahead with this legislation. So I think that we can give a certain timeline that will in fact allow these submissions to be made. And as I said before, I think we should take submissions from other members of the public as well, so that we can get a full sense and an independent sense from the public out there as to what the implications of this would be. ESCOM should be given an opportunity to respond to that. And if they choose not to do that, well, then we should just move ahead, if that is the case. So either we have to set a timeline that will generate this bill in time for its passing by the end of the year, and we need to work out the details as to what that timeline would look at. And ESCOM needs to be told these timelines, and they need to fit in with our schedule, not us fitting in with their schedule. And I think that message needs to go out today. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, I'm after the thing once again at the expense of repeating, we are about to enter the third window of the first phase of the procurement process of the renewable energy for independent power producers. I'm looking at you, Sisney. The first window group, we're supposed to have started construction now, you know, and therefore the generation would have been starting somewhere in the middle of next year. You're not nodding now. No, just a nod is okay. And that implies legislative, regulatory, and policy refinement, because the base has been there all along, the Energy White Paper and Energy Act and other things. These other areas where we've been fingering should be there to ensure. That's why I wanted NESA to be closer, because I still have to ask them the questions. You haven't escaped. Now, it therefore means, amongst those tools to create this conducive environment for the IPP is the ISMO B. I trust and hope people understand, it's not about just we are itching to have a bill passed. There is a very strong imperative behind us that's driving us. We can't afford, as peace loving parts of South Africa, to be sitting here, honourable members, and say, look, we haven't created a conducive environment for the IPPs to do their job. ESCOM has considered and said it very openly that they welcome the inclusion of IPPs. And here we are at a stage whereby we are enhancing that environment for more generation of power. And I'm just prefacing my input on that. And I take into account the input that have been said by members who are quite assertive, and rightly so. Notwithstanding that, we may have had expectations, and also some of the processes may have, indicated, or resulted otherwise. But one of the things I tend to be at a loss is the teamwork. We allow them to go and do this work as a team. But since ESCOM has to take the flag all the time, okay, we're neither here nor there. Honourable members, can you welcome the suggestion that let us just invite submissions, even if just written submissions, as to how people see this forthcoming? Because unfortunately, to the whole team, we can't afford to take any further chances now. We need to move with speed. There is expertise as well outside the team, outside the three departments and ESCOM. Let's welcome that they can submit their 5 pages and things. We pull them together just to say what are the implications for the transfer. That's fair enough. But maybe one of the things that's important is that we should target to complete the bill by the end of the year. Madam, I hope you comments, because stretching it to next year may have some other implications. She is nothing. That's the state law advisor. Okay, fine. We definitely are going to have regular updates. It's no longer going to be a quiet, and a formal regular update to me, whether I send it to the various members by SMS or email, just to have a sense, it has to be quite frequent now. Not beyond, the frequency must be within a month, but even more frequent than that, if possible. This exercise, or this task, is standing on two legs, the further due diligence. what are the implications of the transfer issues that have been raised, but also the scenario building. Honourable members, I maintain the scenario building can be done a bit faster. Because that's one of the things that would help us to take a decision. Because as we have been engaging, something that strikes my mind is that, you know, even if we wouldn't have taken this exercise, probably parallel to what we're doing, the whole further due diligence would have still been necessary towards conclusion of this bill in any case. Because one of the most important things we want to know, what does it mean to take a certain route? We know the end state. Let me once again on record repeat that the white paper says the end state transmission is standalone. That we know. But the issue is how. So that's why we wanted the scenario building. And I'm sure we can all agree on the members. At least that one. Let's get the first draft within 1 month. Let's get the first draft within 1 month. All the scenario building. That these are the different routes that could be taken towards the ultimate destination of the transmission sector, or how long it stays within ESCOM, or whatever, you know, that would come out of that. I'm sure ESCOM will appreciate, together with the department, not just the department, that at least this arrangement would really take us further. We're quite sensitive to the pressures they're facing, but national treasury, unfortunately, many as I, 6 months, 4 months, as we can say, we are just not convinced. Sorry. We are just not convinced. And that's the reason why, even if it has a dent on your confidence, we're saying that we're just going to go out very, very soon, committee secretary, to just invite, not in form of public hearings, I'm sure honorable members are agreeable, just some written input within the next 3-4 weeks to say, from our side as an expert, this is how I feel this can be handled, you know. Because you see, on the other hand, why I keep on talking about this teamwork, we seem to be moving in seconds here. We're not picking up exactly, you know, how we can take things forward. So, unfortunately to the team, that's why we're opting for a reinforcement externally. Otherwise, under normal circumstances, we shouldn't be doing that. We really shouldn't be doing that, frankly and honestly. We should have just taken cue from you, making your technical input, and then we do our job as the public representative. But there it is, unfortunately. Yeah, one of members, is there anything else we can say on this matter? Prof, I hope okay in terms of what we have said. No. So on the tricky one, the further due diligence, that's why I'm coming back to you, because I already said our target is that we're going to have to be completing this bid by the end of this year. And I'm fairly convinced with your concurrence that specifically on the scenario building exercise, we can give us something within a month from the 7th of August, that is within the first week of September. Now, on further due diligence, Prof, you said 2 months, isn't it? Can you go along with that, honorable member? 2 months. That's it. Yeah, so today. And of course, I think the regular update should be more frequent. It should be on a fortnightly basis. Even if it's just a few centimeters or few millimeters of progress, that's fine. Let me hear it. Let me be convinced or not convinced, because we don't want to face this. And the honorable members are going to hold hands together and say, we complete this deal within this year. It's doable. Yes,
Chairman, just to reinforce the teamwork, can you again confirm that DOE is the lead of the team and that next time I'll sit there and they'll sit here?
Well, Mrs. Snelly is, the problem is that Mrs. Snelly is smiling, but she is shaking her head. Now, honorable members, what do we do? Because she should be smiling and then nodding, because as the sponsor of the bill. Okay, Mrs. Snelly.
Yeah, not sure. There is no problem with that. But unfortunately, Chair, when it's all said and done, ESCOM is key to this. Now, if ESCOM is going to be coming here and say that I need to lead, they must make sure that they do their part. It's as simple as that. So we're here because the work has not been done. That's the bottom line. So if they want to be led, I'm happy to lead, but they need to do their job.
Yeah. But this is causing, and this is cause us to leave. Even in English, we're not going to translate anything. Look, we're going to be a bit firm, I'm sure, on speaking of all the eyes of all the members, about the need for teamwork. Teams cannot work. We don't want to go to the unfortunate past. We want to focus on present and the future. Please. ESCOM, Public Enterprise, National Treasury, and Energy. As the leader of the team, the convener, coordinator, can you make sure that we do our best to wipe out this unfortunate past? 2.5 months having done very little, such that there's nothing to present today. Can you make sure that, one, we really are able to accomplish our objective of completing the bill by the end of the year? Can you make sure that within a month we have the first draft of the general building exercise, and within 2 months we'll have further due diligence? But can it be clear to your mind that we're not going to stop? It's not due to regular updates and things that will stop our own parallel process. We will test whatever you give us against what we get from public, from experts in the public. Funga.
Chair, as you are busy summarizing, I just wanted to emphasize that they should never come back to this portfolio committee bangapachanga next. It's a waste of government money. They should never come here angapachanga next, please. Otherwise, when we call them for very serious things, they don't come here, they make excuses that they don't have money. We're going to have a very serious problem with that.
There you are.
I'm referring, Chair, to all of them, without, you know, separating either Energy or Public Enterprise or Treasury or ESCOM. Because this government money, when they come back here, they must have something to present to us. Rather than coming here to have a holiday, no.
Okay. Point taken. Reinforcing regular updates. Okay? Reinforcing the need for regular updates, because that will give a sense of how far you are. Remember, it doesn't mean that you cannot do things earlier than intended. By the way, you are aware that they are also linked to the linked legislation, that of the amendments of the Electricity Regulation Act in particular. So, amongst other things, if we could be doing this faster, we would be giving ourselves time to address those bills as well, which I trust by now they are with NEDLEC en route to the National Assembly. Honourable members, I'm sure we've done our part on this. It has been tough, it's not been easy. Please, the team, bear with us. It's not just we just want to exercise power, even because we are a legislature, but also we have not just a constitutional duty, but a duty to the nation to ensure that in terms of economic development, we don't see Energy compromising, you know, economic growth by a second by a millimeter, and amongst those to ensure that this piece of legislation makes things easy and better for us as from tomorrow. Otherwise, thanks very much. Can we take a break? We've been at it. Bye, 10-minute break, please. Oh, sorry, before we leave. You know, UNASA things that I've forgotten. UNASA has a homework. I want UNASA at some stage, honorable members, to come and indicate to us its preparedness to ensure through the regulatory framework that the IPPs won't have hassles of access to this transmission. I hope NASA has taken that. It's on record, ne? The committee secretary is recording. As part of this, would like to have something coming up down the line. Just indicate to us, NASA, in writing first, the extent and the character of your preparedness to ensure that access to transmission for ITP, once the first kilowatt or megawatt comes in or comes out of the ITP, just has normal teething problems. Not hassles that will have to push us to quickly have a meeting and a briefing on looking at regulatory things. Let's be a little bit proactive on that. Please, Kulawam, thank you very much. Let's take a break. Members, please. NASA. Viva NASA, viva.
I got the third question right.
You got the instruction very, very loud and clear. Thank you. No, NASA is going back. I haven't got back. But just on that, how far is the... How far? The old runway. You must have been very... But, I mean, one of the members, honestly, we had to be firm today. Yeah, we just had to be firm. You know, it's not just about us. It's about what we do for the country. You know, I mean, all things have lead time, because the bill has got to go to the president as well. And by the time he ascends to it, we'll be close to the Windows 1 group. That's my concern. We'll be close to the Windows 1 group, which I suppose they are starting the construction now. The thing that started last month, it's around there. Yeah. So it's really a commitment. But
what do you think of that establishment of the department as a holding company to kill all these CSS that will be distributed? Not
creating it to be a holding company, but taking responsibility of assuring the data. No. Honorable Flower, that's not Treasury's job. That's not Treasury. In fact, I even thought of raising that. I'm very sure that before ESCOM went out to go and get back for your B2Bs and things, National Treasury had to endorse that. So when it comes to funds or loans of funds or whatever, or anything that has that sizable financial implications, National Treasury is there, either to approve or give assurances. But I'm sure it will come up. In fact, at some stage, when it's members, we have to address the reform of the electricity sector as well. And some of the issues that you're raising will have to come in, because we need to address what are the institutional, arrangements in the electricity sector as it is now, okay, and projecting into the future. Because we're introducing new things like your renewable energies and other things. But your point will come back again on the floor. Yeah, it will definitely come back. Now, honourable members, we've got 1st February, 14th February, 17th February, 21st February, 28th February. Fine. Can we go into the first draft of minutes of the 1st of February, where we had the first briefing by the department on the two amendments, NERA and IRA. I'll take you step by step, the first page. Are you happy with that? Okay, I'll take you to a happy page 2. Okay, page 3. Anyone to move for the adoption of the minutes and the seconder? Honorable Flau moves, Honorable Lucas second. Yes.
I think they moved. I've got one issue that is arising from those minutes. That one of the resolutions that was taken into this meeting was that the department will invite the committee to the EU-Africa Energy Conference. I'm trying to check what happened with regards page 6. The last blessing. 6 resolution, last blessing.
I'm not sure myself in terms of the COVID as a whole, because I was invited. I was even part of the panel in one of the discussions. But you're right, I say the department should invite the committee, not just me. Can you just, the committee secretary, just draw the attention of the department on this and say in future, please, if a decision is taken to invite the committee, let us leave it to the committee members if they are unable to make it. Fine, if they want me to play a specific role as I have done and I was part of the panel, the discussion panel, but to invite members, it would have been appropriate. Okay, honourable members, 17 February. Page 1, that was outcomes of COP17. Page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6. Now that you have accepted the actuality, honourable members, who move for the adoption?
Before the adoption.
Okay.
On 17.1, on page 3.
Yes.
The first unit. I propose that the word second be removed for another 3 million. It should just be members of each consent that then they should accept. And wherever it's found, there's certain of the members. So it's separate members. It's because it's not all of the committee now.
Okay.
And with that amendment,
so how do you know that all members are
raised? No, I didn't say such a member. It only appears to me that there was some disagreement. But the minutes do not arrange that.
Okay. Point taken. Okay, and those members who would... Yes. Who would move? Honorable Lucas moved for the adoption of the minutes. Honorable Failing second. Not that you are being pragmatic, Honorable Failing. I'll ensure that one. 21st February. The Makulu Bus meeting on EDI, page 1, page 2,
on page 1, the issue of the attendance register of the members.
So can you put this aside for next week? so that we have the attendance register. Let's go to the 28th of February. Page 1. Oh, only two pages. Page 2. Can we have a move up? Honorable Khaladebe?
Yeah.
And, any second up? Honorable Smiley.
The other issue that also arises from those minutes is using the resolution, bullet point number one, that we spoke about the issue of the labeling of appliances, and we spoke that the SABS must be invited to be able to engage around this matter, because it was around the issue of the saving of energy. So that people will be able to be aware, so that when they go and buy, they don't buy the appliances that, are not advanced in terms of saving energy. And since then, Chair, we've never taken that initiative. I wonder if it can be able to be put into in consideration.
Honorable Khadebe, thanks for that, but I'm just reminded, I knew, but I just wanted to make sure, we have started that item for this third term somewhere. So we will look into it more holistically in any case. But thanks for raising it, because it's getting quite important. Honorable Slav?
This meeting was dealing with the Ghana Street by Honorable Lucas and Honorable Chief. And it comes apparent to me that in the end, this report was moved for adoption by Honorable Lucas and seconded by Honorable Chief. The very people that were reporting back from Ghana moved and seconded the adoption of the report.
Well, as a practice, it is members who attend the event who have to sanction the report. In fact, if I remember well, that report has been held in abeyance for some time because we could not get Honorable Tinder and Lucas in one meeting. It couldn't have been any other person. It has to be them to say, yes, we endorse the accuracy of the report on guns. In fact, I ensured that, even before they are in one meeting, that they go through it, because it has a lot of pertinent issues, I ensure that they go through this, they do come with it and ensure it's actually. I hope I'm out. Yes, bro?
No, but that's more on page 82.
Oh.
Resolution. It should have said that the very first line can say that end to end. The labeling of appliances is also an important issue.
Oh, okay. Under resolution.
Under resolution.
The labeling of appliances is an important issue, and the committee should invite the SABS on the quality and standards of the appliances.
And important.
Okay, no point taken. So. Yeah. I'm sorry. hope to have settled the matter with you, that those are the delegates who could only say yes or no to the accuracy of the report. Okay, but what this isn't in the practice.
Chair, my sense is that when you submit a report, if myself and honorable prof here submit a report, you must have consensus. And it must be us that gives to say this is a true reflection of what has happened. You can't honorable flower and say, No, that's not true. It is the reflection, you're not the head. So I think this is correct. Because also we're consensus to say no, we must postpone this thing until these two people can be available to send the consensus to say we agree. This is what has happened. And therefore, as the committee said, no, if they agree, this is the thing, and we check and read and understood, then it's fine.
Okay, that's it. Honourable members, next week we'll be handling the outcomes of the Liquid Fuel Charter. The department will be briefing us. I'm sure we must have picked up in the papers. Already the cabinet had addressed with us. That's why it's now possible for them to come up. All those who were around in 2010 would know faster flying in the E249 around the public hearings. And out of that, the department had to go back and refine the charter. So this is the outcome of their work from 2010. So it will be an exciting Tuesday next week. Make sure that you don't have flu or anything. And Friday will be transformation of the LPG. But we're on the main on Tuesday next week, focusing on liquid fuel, as well as the other area would be the government to the department on behalf of government to brief us at what they are doing on interventions on alternative fuel sources, liquid fuel sources, in fact. With that, thanks very much. Yes, sir.
While we talk about the chairman liquid fuels, I'm still thinking that the major players in the fuel industry, transformation is still at nil. How can we put this in somewhere? The transformation in the company, because it's still owned by the same people, they're not moving as fast as they should, and we've been talking about this.
Honorable Lucas, let's hear what the department will be proposing. Because in 2010, the issue raising came up very, very strongly. Now, on that basis, that there hasn't been any transformation in this sector, you know, the department is coming back now to propose. This is how unfortunate situation can be improved or enhanced. Thank you very much. See you next week. Enjoy Women's Day.